We are going to continue with our very special theme about how all of this affects us. Up next, John Truman Wolf joins me. His work, Crisis by Design. We shall be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're going to continue now with this very special theme about trying to avoid this economic crisis that could occur in the future, another one. John Truman Wolf, back with me, was with me a few years ago, Crisis by Design, editor-publisher of the Hard Truth magazine, co-founder of a very prestigious Los Angeles-based business management company. He oversaw the business and financial matters of some huge folks in Hollywood, and here he is back on Coast to Coast. John, it's been too long.
Hey, George, a pleasure to be back with you. Thanks so much.
So, in 2012, when you were last with me, where were we at economically? Were we coming out of it? Were we feeling better about what was happening?
Well, I think there was some, at least statistical recovery from the real crash in 2008, 2009. The stock market bottomed in March of 2009. So things had started inching back in terms of, investments and so forth. Underneath it, George, however, the country has continued to deteriorate in terms of its economic stability. Government debt has continued to grow. Interest on the debt, George, interest on the debt is running at $49,000 a second. A second.
Jeez. We just ate up $98,000, just like that.
Yes, we did. So in 2012, there was some apparency of a recovery, as there seems to be now with the stock market at highest ever numbers. But a recent article just came out which shows that what's driving the Dow Jones is purchasing by central banks. $29 trillion, George, of stock purchases by central banks, and that's what's driving these stock markets up.
So are they doing that to prop up the markets?
Without question.
What happens when they start to unload, John?
Well, that, of course, is to some degree the subject of what we'll talk about. I don't like being pessimistic, but I think there's no question this thing will topple sooner or later. Interest rates will go up, and there'll be all kinds of financial chaos. I'm sorry to say it, but it's true.
So they are kind of keeping the lid on right now, aren't they?
They're definitely keeping the lid on. They're keeping the lid on by keeping interest rates at zero. Janet Yellen hasn't done anything essentially different than Bernanke, although she has started to taper the buying of printing $85 billion a month in buying mortgage-backed securities and other issues. But she's part of the same crowd, and it has been the Fed arbitrarily forcing rates to zero over the last several years that is the apparency of why the market has gone up. Behind the scenes, they've been buying stocks to drive it up, so there is some apparency of fiscal prosperity. It's a lie, George. It's a falsehood.
What would happen to the stock market, John, today if they weren't propping it up?
Well, I can give you an opinion. It would be in the toilet. I mean, that's the truth of the matter. There are some corporations doing well. There are, not everything's black. But look, the president keeps touting the fact that the unemployment rate's gone down. But I think, as you probably know, and many of your listeners probably know, it's going down because people aren't going out and seeking jobs. They have dropped out of the job market and they aren't counted.
I was just talking with my previous guest about that. And you're right. I mean, people just have walked out of the job market. They got frustrated.
Yeah, they did. And so corporations are laying off thousands, millions of people not working, food stamps and welfare at an all-time high. And look, when you validate, when you encourage not working, no production. That's what you get when you pay people not to work. You get people not working.
As minimal as you pay them.
That's exactly right. I mean, I remember in the Senate here a little while back, there was legislation to that sought to extend the unemployment benefits past, I forget what the time frame was now, 2 years or something like that, just paying billions and billions of dollars to pay people not to work. And one senator questioned where the money was going to come from. He didn't say we weren't going to do it. He just said, how are we going to pay for it? And he was slaughtered PR-wise for just even raising the issue. So dependency and Big Brother and the government supporting folks has become such a way of life such that when a senator questions how are we going to pay for something, he becomes the target of a PR attack.
John, the last debacle seemed to come out of left field.
Well, the last debacle, and we've talked about this previously, and for those listeners that, you know, didn't catch that show, the last debacle actually was caused by the Bank for International Settlements. Most people have never heard of this bank, George. The Bank for International Settlements is in Basel, Switzerland. It is the central banker's central bank. And these are the guys pulling the strings. Most people don't know that in 2009, at a G20 meeting in London, the G20 meeting is just an organization of the 20 industrial nations, there was created an entity called the Financial Stability Board. This entity was put inside of the Bank for International Settlements and is basically controlling the central banks of the world.
Huh.
Because the Fed belongs to the BIS, the Bank of Canada, the Bank of Japan, the Bank of Italy.
They all do.
They all do, and the Bank for International Settlements is the mother bank. This is a bank that is not affected by Swiss law. Its employees are immune from prosecution. They have their own law enforcement military on the property. They are a nation unto themselves, untouchable by any government. Every couple of months, the heads of the central banks in the world fly in there. They meet. They decide what they're going to do in the respective countries. And that is the control point of international finance on planet Earth.
Who are these people?
Well, they're the heads of the central banks. Greenspan was on the board of directors. After him, Bernanke. And I haven't looked, but I presume Janet Yellen is on the board of directors. The U.S. Treasury Secretary is on the board, and the heads of the other central banks around the planet. There's a cadre of about a dozen of them that are really the power brokers: Germany, Belgium, England. These are the guys pulling the strings.
How powerful are they, John?
George, they call the shots. These are the guys. I mean, people get into conspiracy theory, this, that. No. Just read the data. These are the guys that tell the central banks what to do. The central banks basically control the governments. Now, that's not hyperbole.
What do they want? What's their mission? Their goal?
They want control. They want fiscal planetary control. I don't like saying it, but they're getting it. The Rockefeller Rothschild banking families got their fangs into Western Europe and into the United States in the late 19th century, early 20th century. We're bankrupt. Europe's bankrupt. They hadn't gotten their fangs into China fully, and the major communist nation on planet Earth, George, the PRC, the People's Republic of China, has $3.5 trillion in reserves. Karl Marx is beyond delighted.
Rolling in his grave, isn't he?
He's laughing in his grave. He's joyous. As you may or may not remember, when I published the book originally, some folks in Beijing, some friends in Taiwan got it, some folks in Beijing.
They flew you there, didn't they?
They flew me there. I spent a week talking to these guys. And trying to orient them to be responsible beyond their own self-interest. Because the truth of the matter is, while China is now represented as the second most powerful economy on the earth, very quickly they'll be number one. I don't like saying it, but it's going to happen.
So I keep hearing stories that they could implode. Their economy could implode.
There are some weak points, I wouldn't say, I don't know that he's a good friend of mine, but a friend of mine, Bert Doman, who writes on this, is a real China bear, and he's a smart guy. On the other side of the coin is Jim Rogers, who used to be George Soros' partner, and is also a very smart guy. And Rogers is buying China. Bert Doman is selling it. There are some out points. There are some real estate bubbles. My youngest daughter lives there. She lives in Beijing. She's been there for a decade, and she says, you know, you can drive through some cities, and there are you know, whole building complexes that are just empty. So there are some problems. Meanwhile, the RMB, which is the Chinese currency, that currency has got two names, the RMB and the yuan, continues to gain credence around the planet as the dollar sinks. And they're still much, much, much more productive than we are.
China is a capitalist country that has become a communist country, and it works.
It is working, and it has worked. I mean, they started turning that corner, George, as you describe it, about 20 years ago, actually a little more than 20 years ago, in the late 80s. And they have gradiently become more and more free market. Nevertheless, the Communist Party still runs the country. They have a horrid human rights record. But in terms of kind of their managing of the economy, so far, they've done a hell of a job. I have to grant them that.
Who were the geniuses behind that in China? I mean, they did it methodically with an incredible business acumen.
Yeah, they were these guys. You know, they call themselves communists, and they're the most studious capitalists around.
Well, they are. These are the guys I see in Vegas. Having a great time.
That's right. I mean, there's more billionaires in Beijing than there are in New York City. There's a tremendous amount of money there. And like what happened in the 80s when Japan was buying a lot of American real estate, this is happening with China now. They're buying a lot of assets in the United States because the yuan is strong. The dollar continues to become weaker and weaker and weaker. And they're buying up a lot of assets. They're buying up banks. They're buying up
farmland.
Farmland. That's right. Farmland, et cetera.
If they wanted to, let's say they bought up most of the heartland, and they said, "We're going to produce corn, but you're not getting any of it. We own the land. We're shipping it to China." Could they do that?
Well, I don't know why they couldn't, George. If they buy the land and they're producing the corn, they could do it. If they buy energy, for instance, like in North Dakota, because they bought energy in Canada, and they are energy dependent, they are oil dependent, it's theirs. They own it. What do we do? Tell them no?
You can't. You can't nationalize it, can you?
No. I mean,
not at this point.
No.
So how about the person who just wants to be left alone, wants to raise his family, have his car, maybe two, a little house, get his job, have some fun, go to a sporting event, come home and enjoy himself, watch football on Sunday, just wants to be left alone, John, a little barbecue that day as well. What do you tell that guy?
You know, that's the American dream. One of the things that I tell that guy is to be very careful where you've got your money placed, or be smart about where you've got your money placed. One of the things, an article I recently wrote, exposes what happened in Cyprus about a year ago. You may recall that some banks on Cyprus went broke, and it made a bunch of international...
And they took money.
They took money. What they did, George, was they called it a bail-in, which meant that they took depositors' money and they converted it to bank stock, so that the depositors now, without any decision on their part, became stockholders in these banks. Now,
and they took it all.
No, not
Did
all.
They? No.
No, okay. They took about 20%.
Okay.
They took about 20% of it. And but here's the deal. That was a pilot program.
A test.
It was a test. That's right, George. So when you look at what they did, then one of the members of the European financial community, the Dutch finance minister, went, well, that's the plan going forward. That's what we're planning to do. A guy by the name of Mario Draghi, who is the chairman of the European Central Bank, like the Fed of Europe, his name is Mario Draghi. He jumped on this guy very quickly and he went, no, we're not doing that. Well, come to find out that the FDIC and the Bank of England, who, according to some reports, owns the Fed or a good part of the U.S. Fed, issued a statement that, in fact, this is the plan in the U.S. If a bank goes under, a big bank, they call them SIFIs. In fact, they call them G-SIFIs, globally significant.
Like a Bank America, that size?
Yes. Globally active, systematically important financial institutions, G-SIFIs. So these are any financial institution that the government, quote, or the Fed determines is such that if it failed, it would cause some kind of crisis. Because the term too big to fail, which got bounced around in 2008, 2009, was not popular.
No, but it's true. It is too big to fail. So they got to prop it up.
So the plan that they rolled out in December at the end of 2012 was, okay, good. If there's a failure, we're going to take the money from the creditors. Most people don't know, George, that when they deposit money in a bank, and this is getting back to your question about the guy that wants to do his barbecue and watch a football game, that money is no longer his. That money belongs to the bank. He's a creditor of the banks. The bank owes him the money.
That's right.
But he's an unsecured creditor, and the bank owns that money. Well, given this plan issued by the FDIC, folks can go online and take a look at it anywhere, that plan that occurred in Cyprus is now on the drawing boards for the United States for these big banks. And when you pull the string and investigate a little bit about how the FDIC and Bank of England's statement that they were going to do that, where that plan came from, it came from the Bank of International Settlements.
So when could that be implemented here?
George?
Who knows?
It could be implemented tomorrow. I mean, I don't mean to sound alarmist. The point is, it's in place. Now, some people have said, well, no, Congress would have to authorize it. Maybe, maybe not. The arbitrary nature of government these days, they could just implement it.
Well, if Congress was contemplating it, there'd be a run on the banks while they were trying to decide what to do.
No question about it. It's outrageous. It's there. You know, you can find it if you research, but most people don't have a clue. They think they put money in the bank. It's their money. They can get it whenever they want. No, you're a creditor.
It's not that easy. Try taking money out of the bank after you put it in, John. It's pretty tough.
Exactly true.
We're going to come back. We'll talk more with John Truman Wolf on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, next hour we'll take your phone calls with John Truman Wolf again as our theme tonight, Crisis by Design. We'll be back with John and much more on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with John Truman Wolf. John, when the fiasco occurred back 2007, 2008, nobody really saw that coming except the few guests that I had on the air. They kept talking about this potential burst, this bubble burst. Now, people are talking more about it. Experts are talking about it way more than they did before. That concerns me.
Yeah, there's a lot more. You're right, George. There's a lot more, for lack of a better word, public relations on it. It's coming from good quarters. You can't. It's because the bubble is bigger, George. The debt bubble is bigger. The U.S. government debt bubble is bigger. Corporate debt is bigger. So I think it's more obvious. I think the reason for that is that it's more obvious. Let me, if I can, just take a second, George, because people may have a hard time believing what we were talking about there before the break. This is a statement from the Bank of England and the FDIC. I'm quoting now. An efficient path for returning the sound operations of G-SIFIs. These are globally significant financial institutions. These are the Bank of America, mm-hmm. the Wells Fargo, the Citibanks, to the private sector, returning them to the private sector, would be provided by exchanging or converting a sufficient amount of unsecured debt. That's deposits. Unsecured debt is deposits.
That's it. That's us.
Yeah. Sufficient amount of unsecured debt from the original creditors, depositors, to the failed company into equity. So they're talking about converting your deposit money into stock of the bank without your permission.
So you'd be a stockholder and you're stuck with it.
That's correct.
It's probably worthless.
It's probably worthless, as is true in the Bank of Cyprus. That's what happened there. That was the pilot program. They took about 20% of the deposits. It kind of depended on how the deposits were, but ballpark 20%. And they just, without asking anybody, just converted it into stock.
What's the impetus for this to kick in?
Well, the impetus for this to kick in is if one of these large banks starts to fail. Now, what would cause them to fail, George? I'll tell you what would cause them to fail. We've got 1.4 quadrillion dollars worth of derivatives floating on this planet.
Still.
It continues to grow.
And they didn't learn anything from 2007.
No, that's right. The mortgage-backed securities, which are derivatives, and for the audience, a derivative is simply a security that derives its value from something else. So the mortgage-backed securities were packages of mortgages, and the package was wrapped in a security, and so it's a derivative. It derived its value from the mortgages. But the derivatives that are out there, George, about 60% or about $600 to $700 trillion worth of these derivatives are what are called interest rate swaps, which are nothing other than bets on interest rates. That's it. They're just bets on interest rates.
It's Vegas all over again.
It is. It is hundreds of trillions of dollars worth of Las Vegas on a global financial scale. So what happens? This gets back to your question. What would trigger this? Well, these banks, U.S. banks, are pregnant with these things. They have trillions and trillions. There's about $228 trillion in large U.S. banks in derivatives. So let's say, and these are sensitive to interest rates. So if rates go up, and sooner or later, George, they've got to go up, there's going to be slaughter in some of these banks. But what happens?
Huh.
The derivatives are senior to the unsecured creditors, meaning the depositors.
Us.
Do you follow?
Yeah.
So that's what happens. The depositors.
So they'll grab us before anything with these derivatives.
They will, because the derivatives have, at least they represent that they have security. But the depositor, the depositor has no security. He's just got a deposit in there.
So what if you keep minimal money in the bank to cover your bills every week or something, and the rest you hoard in cash in some safe somewhere?
Well, I think the first thing is that people should, stay below the minimum, because what happened in Cyprus is the up to 100,000 euros was covered by insurance, and they left those people alone. Now, there's no guarantee that that will happen in the United States, but for goodness sakes, keep it below the 250 area. The other thing I would say is, this is a general statement, but is generally true, credit unions are safer than banks. Credit unions are generally not pregnant with derivatives, most of them. Some may have some mortgage-backed securities, but they are not packed in with trillions of dollars of these interest rate swaps.
And they don't march to the tune of some of these central banks, do they?
Exactly correct. Yeah. So that's a safer place to keep your deposits.
Will there be, John, a rebound like there was last time? Because, let me explain that. One, if you had some money, you could have made a fortune in the stock market. I was looking at one stock that got down to $1.14 a share.
Yeah.
It's now at $85. I mean, in 6 years, six, 7 years.
Right.
So I had that. Housing, for example, in Los Angeles plummeted. It's higher than it used to be.
Yeah.
So will there be a rebound after this next collapse?
Here's my opinion. I think the next collapse is going to be worse. Again, I don't like giving bad news, but my opinion, it's going to get nastier. It'll go down more. At some point, I'm sure there will be a rebound, but not like what happened the crash basically was late 2007, 2008. It bottomed.
And then they had the bailout.
Yeah, Then they had the bailout. The recovery started, at least the stock market, you're talking about the stock market recovered, started recovering in March, April of 2009, and then it's, you know, inched its way back up. So will there be a recovery, assuming there's another crash? I'm sure at some point. I just think people should be very, very protected because I think this next crash is going to be a lot worse.
I mean, like we bought out General Motors and now, you know, they seem to be holding on in spite of their recalls. But can they sustain another big hit? I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
But will they use the same formula that they did, the bailouts? You know, let's save the banks, let's save the companies, let's bail them out, forget about the average person.
You know, I don't know what government will do. I don't know who will be in charge.
Or will there be a war?
No. You mean in the U.S., like a civil war?
Well, that's a possibility. We talked about that earlier with Craig Hewlett. But, I mean, would there be a World War III, to keep things rolling?
I don't think so. I think the wars as we go forward will be financial wars. I think they will be currency wars. If you look at what Brzezinski and David Rockefeller said, and Brzezinski has continued to say when they founded the Trilateral Commission, you've got the dollar, the euro, and the yuan at this point. The Chinese currency is getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And you've got a trilateral or a kind of a three-piece segmenting of the planet. And I think the wars will be economic, more economic, George, and I think there will be currency wars. I think, you know, the battlefield wars are morphing over to drones, which is another subject entirely. But, you know, they send these things out and basically assassinate people by drones. So I think there'll be less and less of the traditional ground wars like World War II or Korea.
Unless you need to just clean things up. They'll obliterate everything. And then the ground troops will just come in and clean what's left up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you follow DARPA, which you, I'm guessing you probably do, which is kind of the Defense Department's research organization, the Dr. Strange love of American defense. These guys are now building robots to fight. This is like something out of science fiction.
Yeah,
except it's
amazing.
Not science fiction.
It's real. So again, back to our barbecuing sports guy.
Yeah.
And family, what do they do?
I think they should, one, move their money to a good, solid credit union, number one. Number two, I would encourage people to have some precious metals tucked away. I'm a bigger fan of silver than I am of gold. Precious metals, maybe 80% silver, 20% gold.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is smart. I mean, it kind of depends on how much money, you know, our barbecuing guy has got to diversify in terms of his reserves. But if he's got enough, I would suggest diversifying some into some foreign currencies. Get out of U.S. dollars, some part of their assets out of U.S. dollars.
What if you have a lot of credit card debt and stuff like that?
Well, it would depend on what the person's cash situation is. Credit card debt these days, in most cases, while banks are paying 0% to borrow from the Fed. They're charging, you know, credit card users,
huge,
18%, 24%, you know, miss a payment or be 10 days late and your rate goes from 12.9 to 24.9.
Yeah.
It's slaughter. So those things aren't good. They're not.
It's going to be interesting times ahead, John.
They are, and it will be. I think it's going to be really something that the public is going to have to confront and deal with. And I encourage people to go to basics, some gold, get some money out of U.S. dollars. There are banks where you can put in a foreign deposit in Swiss francs or Chinese yuan.
Keep some cash.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Do you see this as a potential worldwide collapse?
Yes.
Bigger than anything?
That's my opinion. I think this is going to be nasty. Here's what I think, George. I think the target is going to be the United States.
On purpose.
On purpose. So that we are so...
Dependent?
Dependent that we have to turn to the IMF for more loans. And now they've got more control over us, the IMF and the Bank for International Settlements, because the Bank for International Settlements controls the IMF.
We still have one thing they don't, an incredible military.
Yeah, but, you know, who's the commander in chief and who's telling the military, you know, what to do? I mean, the fact of the matter is that the Fed has been calling the shots in Washington, D.C. for an awful lot of years. And the military has, the only person who's really done anything about that was Ron Paul, who called for an audit of the Fed, and they did do an audit of what the Fed did during the financial crisis, and it was outrageous. Trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars lent to
their friends.
That's right, to their friends in foreign countries.
Does this scare you? I don't know if you have family or not, but
I have family. I have kids and I have grandkids, and it bothers me to think about what the grandkids are going to face. It doesn't scare me. I structure myself in a way that I feel in good shape, but I got grandkids that are 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, and this is coming. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know when. But this is going to come, and I think it's very smart for people to start taking steps now to protect themselves.
What are the signs that we can see? And maybe you're going to tell me we're seeing them now, but what are the signs that are out there, John, that would convince you and other experts that it's really close? You can't say that yet, right?
No, I can't say that except for this, that the amount of debt continues to escalate and Congress has done nothing. It doesn't matter what political party is in charge of Congress. The debt just continues to mushroom. And as it continues to mushroom, that is that's a telling sign. I think the stock market exuberance where the central banks are the ones buying the stock. The Fed is printing money and driving the stock market. I don't, people think, oh, well, the American economy is doing well. No, no, no. The Fed is driving that.
Yeah. Yet money, though, John, is flowing. I mean, Facebook showing expectations beyond what the street said they would earn. I mean, companies are making money. They're making huge money. Where's it coming from?
Technology companies are making huge amounts of money. Apple's got more money, at least the last time I looked, George, Apple's got more money in the bank than the United States government.
Amazon, Google, all of them, they're doing great.
$76 billion in the bank. I mean,
what bank? I want that bank.
Yeah. The truth is that those are few and far between. You got Google, you got Facebook, you've got Apple.
You got Microsoft.
Yeah, but look at the chain stores and the retail brick and mortar stores
like Sears
that you and I grew up with. They're going out of business, George. They are firing people. They're Sears closed a bunch of stores. They let a bunch of people go. Just since you mentioned Sears.
And who would ever think that would happen?
Yeah, not me. I mean, it wasn't something that I was.
The internet destroyed the bricks and mortar businesses
to a very large extent.
It's killing the newspaper business.
Yes. Yep.
It's making dramatic changes in the radio business. We're adapting. I mean, we do a lot of digital and stuff. You have to go with the change, or you're going to be up a creek.
Well, that's exactly why I started publishing the Hard Truth mag online. It's online.
Oh, you have to.
It's not print. I sell six times more books for digital download than I do print. The books are available both ways, but I have six times more, you know, Kindle downloads and iPad downloads than people that buy print today.
When I'm in St. Louis, which is where I have my other studio and I do some shows there, you know, I'll wake up for lunch. I'll go do some pre-prep for the show. I'll get my tablet and yeah. I'll go to lunch and I'll turn it on and I'll start reading online newspapers, the St. Yeah. Louis Post-Dispatch, the LA Times, New York Times. I start reading them all and it's right there at my fingertips.
Yeah.
I don't have to go to a newspaper stand anymore, and it's just right there. Technology has done an amazing job. But I got to tell you, one of the things we have been talking about, John, over the last several years, and that's the possibility of a solar flare or an MP attack, EMP attack, that would knock out our power system. All these technologies are up a creek if that happens.
I think the possibility of that happening is much more real than people realize.
Absolutely.
We've become so dependent on the internet that there are generations that are growing up. Talked about grandkids. I mean, they're raised with iPhones and pads, you know, iPads and so forth and so on. They haven't grown up with a pencil and paper and you know, it doesn't exist.
In my day, a television station in a local market, let's say like Detroit, might command $175, $200 million if you're going to buy one of the network-affiliated stations there.
Right.
Nowadays, you can go out and get a little Google Chrome, plug it into your flat screen, download programs off the internet, and watch it on your screen. You don't have to spend that kind of money to buy a TV station if you're an investor. You can just do a little programming on the internet.
It's a very different world. And while there are pluses to it, it also there are liabilities to it because the potential risk factor, I think, is huge.
And here's an example. Again, if the power goes down, all those people that are buying ads on Facebook, they're not going to pay their money.
No.
It's gone. The business is gone. We're going to come back in a moment with you, John. We'll take a final hour to go. We'll take some phone calls. John Truman Wolf with us. His websites are all linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. His book, Crisis by Design, yeah, the subtitle, of course, is The Untold Story of the Global Financial Corp and What You Can Do About It. Coup, Financial Coup. We'll be back.